Welcome to Knot Work Myth and Storytelling. This is the show where ancestral wisdom meets the modern imagination and our timeless connection to the land itself. Season 7, Episode 5, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll. Cuchulainn, the Outsider, a story by Peter Vukerfenig. I'm so glad to welcome you back to the show. If this is your first time here, I'm your host, Marisa Gowdy. And I'm so delighted to introduce you to my friend, Peter. Peter and I met at the Bard Summer School on Clare Island last summer. And if you don't know the Bard, go find them at bardmythologies.com. They are a treasure. The Bard is a special group of people. You feel as if you've known these folks for years, even if you've only met them a few times in a Zoom room. The moment that Peter and I got together on Clare Island after knowing each other during the virtual sessions, well, it was as if we'd known each other for lifetimes. Peter is a nurse who has worked in intensive care units since 1991. In the mid-1990s, he picked up the harp and also found himself in the company of Scottish storytellers. That began his journey to Irish mythology and beyond. He's spent the years since traveling between the worlds of the hospital, the workers' council, and his own calling as a bard. He describes it wonderfully as the feeling of a donkey following a carrot. I think anyone who has ever tried to do the sacred creative work alongside the demands of ordinary life will recognize themselves in that metaphor. Today, Peter brings us one of the great figures of Irish mythology, Cuchulainn. And after 120-something Knotwork episodes, it seems wild to say it, but this is the first Cuchulainn story we've told on the show. We were waiting for just the right moment, clearly. And Peter doesn't just bring us a story. He brings us the sound of his harps, a poem by Yeats, a rock and roll detour through Phil Lynott and Thin Lizzy. Enjoy. I am so excited to welcome Peter onto the podcast. And as is our way at Knotwork Myth and Storytelling, we'll first ask the story to speak for itself. And then we'll explore all the ways that it still matters and resonates. And in this particular story, we're going to ask it to do more than speak. We'll ask it to sing because Peter's bringing his harps to play as well. So Peter Falcha, so glad you're here. Share with us your story.
Thanks for having me, Marisa. Tonight, I would like to tell about maybe the most outstanding character of the Irish mythology, the great hero Cuchulainn. And I'd like to start with a writing of William Butler Yeats. In his writing, Cuchulainn says to Conor MacNessa, the king, "You and I will leave names on the harp." So that's why we start with the Irish harp. I try to take you to the ancient Emerald Isle. Well, first I want you to imagine the stormy coastline of Western Ireland. You may think mythic storytelling is something of long ago. On the one hand, you're right, but on the other hand, these stories are timeless. They happen all the time, maybe just half an hour ago. And I would like to take you to an occasion which is just 50 years ago. Yeah, imagine the wide Atlantic Way and a place where a young man is standing. A handsome young man. Yes, dark eyes. His hair, black as the raven's wing, brown skin, and all dressed up in denim and leather. The talk is of the late great musician Phil Lynott. Some of you may remember his band Thin Lizzy. He was quite famous in Europe and in the US in the 70s of the 20th century. And he felt a very strong connection to Cuchulainn. And he had a little ritual. Often he was standing at the sea, staring at the sea, and he said, "Here are the four original elements. We have the sea with the salty water. We have the air with a perfect smell of fish and seaweed. Here are the rocks standing firm against the tide and the solid earth." And then his friend close by his side says to him, "Yes, but the fire is missing." Phil smiled and takes out a lighter, starts to smoking a cigarette, and says, "Here is the fire." Yeah, he was very much into the mythology. And his strong connection to Cuchulainn was because, just like his role model, he was an outcast. Phil's father came from Jamaica. So as a child, he had to do with racism and alienation by his comrades. So he even wrote a song about Cuchulainn, and I like to quote the lyrics, just some of them. "Tell me the legends of long ago, when the kings and queens would dance in the realm of the Black Rose. Play me their melodies, I want to know. Tell me the story of young Cuchulainn, how his eyes were dark, his expression sullen, and how he'd fight and always won, and how they cried when he was fallen." Now, just like him, Cuchulainn was an outcast from the beginning. Imagine a child, dark, strange, smarter and stronger as anyone else. And he was an otherworldly creature, because the Celtic god of the sun, Lu, was his father. And his mother was an Ulster woman by the name of Dechtr. Yeah, and from the beginning, all children refused to play with him because he was different. He was from a different stable, he came from a different background. And even as a child, he started to build a reputation as an ultimate warrior. His original name was Setanta, and one day he killed a giant, ferocious dog. And this dog belonged to a wealthy smith by the name of Kulan. And this was a guard dog, and Setanta had to replace him until a new one were to be found. And so he got his name, Cuchulainn, the Hound of Kulan. Later, when he was coming of age, he was sent to the Isle of Skye. You may know the Isle of Skye is situated in the west of Scotland. And at that time, this was the home of the greatest master of weaponry all over. The talk is of the famous and notorious warrior queen Skaha. She had a kind of academy of martial arts, so to say, and she drew apprentices from all over. And even the journey to her dwelling was a dangerous mission. Imagine Cuchulainn, maybe 12 or 13 years old, when he set foot on the isle. The whole journey was accompanied by miraculous apparitions. He had to follow a mysterious golden wheel to find his way, and he passed through black forests, narrow valleys with great waterfalls. And then there were places like the Plain of Ill Luck, with the danger to sink into bottomless box. Or there was the perilous glen, where you had multitudes of ravenous beasts. So there were death threats all over. But you have to know, the most dangerous challenge was about to come. At the end of his journey, he came to the place where the fortress of Skaha was. And you have to imagine it was separated from the mainland. It was on a special small island called the Island of Shadows. And it was separated by a deep gorge. And the gorge was flooded by boiling waters. And the waters were full of sea monsters and ugly creatures. And the only way to cross the gorge was a weird bridge, a real weird bridge, because the bridge was constructed somewhere in the abyss of time by a species of demons. And this bridge had a life of its own. If someone would dare to set foot on it, it would rise up in the middle and throw the intruder off. But Cuchulainn was smart. He examined the place, and then he moved back a distance, started to run, and did a giant leap. And he landed in the middle of the bridge and did another giant leap, and he reached the other side safe and sound. And now imagine he was standing before this huge portal of the castle of Skaha. The whole place was surrounded by magic mist, strange noises were everywhere. And Cuchulainn didn't know that all eyes of the castle were upon him. Suddenly, the gate opened and the gatekeeper took him to Skaha. And from the beginning, there was chemistry between the two of them for some strange reason. And Skaha's eyes widened as she saw the handsome young man. And she introduced him to her beautiful daughter by the name of Uatha. Now, something between the young ones was happening. Some kind of resonating or something else. I think I don't have to explain. And this was not unnoticed by the gatekeeper. Now, in a warrior society, violence is close at hand always. And it didn't take long. The gatekeeper and Cuchulainn drew their swords and started a fight to death. Well, not long, and the gatekeeper found himself beheaded, his glassy eyes staring into eternity. Now, this fate would await many warriors who dare to challenge Cuchulainn in the future. I would even go so far, it would become his trademark. Anyway, so thus Cuchulainn got his second job as a door or gatekeeper, because his predecessor was dead. Someone got to take the job. He got to do it. He did. And immediately his education began. And Cuchulainn was eager to learn, to learn every weapon of the time. He learned to fight on horseback. He learned to fight on the chariot. And the knights, this was another story. Because Skaha was not only a warrior, she was also a sorceress and a radiant, beautiful woman. She was very much into magic potions, and she was dealing with the art of ecstasy, and she introduced Cuchulainn to something else. It was a true wild coming of age. And on some nights, Uatha, the daughter of Skaha, warmed his bed. A wild time, as I mentioned, and After 1 year and one day, Skaha was leading her pupil to a secret place. It was deep down in the foundation of the rocks, and there was a huge cave. And inside the cave was a pool of hot, bubbling water. The steam was rising. There was a smell of sulfur in the air. The place was lit by torches and the water was sparkling. And Skaha said to her pupil, "Now, this will be your final test. We will go in the pool and then we will wrestle. And the winner will be of 3 rounds. Well, both jumped in the hot water and started to wrestle. In the first round, Skaha threw Cuchulainn. In the second round, he threw his mistress. And the third round, there was no winner. They held each other tight, and after a while, Skaha withdrew and said, "Well, the pupil has become the master." And as a symbol for his mature, she gave him a magical weapon. This was maybe the most evil weapon of the time. It was the notorious Gay Bolga, a magical spear that would always find its target. Now, one fateful day, this weapon would suck out the soul of his master. But this is another story. Well, you could expect this story could end now, but it will go on a bit further. But before I do that, I will play just a short intermission, another short tune on the harp, and then we will continue. But don't worry, it won't get too long. Story of sex, drugs, and rock and roll will continue. And now it will be forced by a very original force, the force of family business. Well, I don't tell you something new. Family business can be heaven or hell or anything between it. You have to know Skaha had a sister by the name of Eve. And they were arch enemies. And by the time Skaha got a challenge for battle from Eve, because Eve had heard of the young champion and she wanted to find out about his fighting skills. Now Skaha was fearful for the safety of her pupil, because she knew Eve was even a better warrior. But anyway, there was no way of avoiding the clash. Skaha gathered her warriors and prepared for battle. But in the night before they would ride out, she gave Cuchulainn a magical potion that would send a man 24 hours to sleep. But you should have known, Cuchulainn was no ordinary man. So his sleep lasted only 2 or 3 hours. And when he found that the army was gone, he got on his chariot and followed to the place where of battle. Yeah, it was on a barren plain. The armies gathered and a fearful battle began. It took not long and the fighters were wading through a pool of crimson. Limbs were flying through the air and heads rolled. And then Cuchulain and Eve found themselves in single combat, and as equals, they were fighting hour after hour. Now, I won't make this story too long. In the end, Cuchulain used a trick and won the day. Eve was impressed, and Skaha knew what would go on. And the next night, it was a night of surrender on both sides, and Cuchulain became Eve's lover. Well, he would stay a while, and when he left, Eve carried their child in her womb. One day, it would be a very fateful day when Cuchulain would meet his son, and father would kill his son, as fate would have it. So a very sad story. And there will be many more sad stories to tell about Cuchulain, but I would like to leave it for tonight. And I would like to end with a poem of William Butler Yeats, because as far as I can see it, in this poem, we could have a look in the inner world of Cuchulain, as I got it. So I hope you like it. And after the poem, I will play a short lamentation on the original Irish harp. The poem is called An Irish Airman Foresees His Death. I know that I shall meet my fate somewhere among the clouds above. Those that I fight, I do not hate. Those that I guard, I do not love. My country is Kiltartan cross. My countrymen, Kiltartan's poor. No likely end could bring them loss or leave them happier than before. Nor law nor duty bade me fight, nor public men nor cheering crowds. A lonely impulse of delight drove to this tumult in the clouds. I balanced all, brought all to mind. The years to come seemed a waste of breath. A waste of breath the years behind, in balance with this life, this death. Thank you.
Knotwork is a listener-supported show. And if these stories and conversations mean something to you, then becoming a paid subscriber to the Mythworkers Hearth over on Substack is the most direct way to keep the podcast going. As my thank you, paid subscribers receive Tourists, a series of special episodes that go deeper into the mythical, imaginal, and physical landscapes at the heart of this work. It's the journey within the journey. As a paid subscriber, you're also invited to join our monthly hearth gatherings, live storytelling, writing, and conversation with fellow myth-minded companions. You can find the link to subscribe to the Mythworkers Hearth in the show notes or visit us at mythworkers.com. Oh, Peter. Peter of the two harps and Cuchulainn of the three lovers and a story with two heroes. You know, you're one of those people that when I sit with you, I can't quite stop smiling, right? In the most endearing way possible, you make my face hurt when I hang out with you. And I want to say thank you for that, as I'm grinning the whole time as I receive your story, which at the same time, it moves to tears. And there is so much sweetness and sacrifice and duty and loss and potential and lost potential. And my goodness, there must have been quite a few misunderstandings in the midst of it all. Mm-hmm. And then to end us with that gorgeous poem that just so epitomizes this huge question of the warrior.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Cuchulainn is one of the big guys in Irish mythology, but here we are, we're 120 something episodes into Knotwork Myth and Storytelling, and we've never really told a Cuchulainn story. So I want to thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for being, we were waiting for this moment. You know, thank you for being the first. I would just love to explore with you, you know, why this story, why now for you? I would guess it's probably played different roles in your life as you've known it over the years. Mm-hmm. Like what is, like you gave us so eloquently what speaks to you of it, but like help us understand Peter's perspective of this story and what, it, mm-hmm. why it needed to be told.
That's a very good question, Marissa. Maybe one for me when looking back in my youth and maybe also in my life, alienation is a really big thing for me. Mm. Many years I was asking myself, what am I doing here? Mm. And it took a long time to find my tribe. Mm-hmm. And a long time to find out what I'm going to do. And I think it was not until I was in my mid-20s when I started to learn to play the harp and came in touch with the storytelling. And something, it was like you see, the Grateful Dead, they had this iconic picture of the lightning bolt.
Yeah,
I'm sure maybe you know that this lightning bolt, and it was something like that. It was something was resonating with me, and then I came in touch with the Celtic stories, and Cuchulainn moved me in so many ways because I thought he was completely alone from the beginning until his very early end, and there was a kind of a sadness and there was a kind of a darkness. I felt it had something to do with me.
Mm.
I don't know if that answers. It's just to try to answer the question.
Well, you know, it's one of those kind of ironies of the fact that if Cuchulainn is at the center of Irish mythology, especially in its understanding in the early 20th century and the nationalist vision, and you know, there's a statue of Cuchulainn at the General Post Office to really mark the Easter 16 rising. And we know it was so much part of that vision of heroism. And of course, now you and I sit here as outsiders of Irish culture in our own ways by being born in different countries and being called to this lore and this myths and finding our people, finding our Tua through the stories themselves, though we did not grow up with them. You know, if we had an Irish person in this conversation, they would tell us what it's like to learn these stories in school.
Yeah.
And so I really value this ability to have this insider-outsider status that you offer us here. Because what happens when we decentralize one culture's central hero and say, hey, wait a minute, he didn't experience himself that way, if we could imagine what his mind was. But even the stories themselves don't have him as always being, the king's most fortunate son who stepped right in and took things over without any trouble.
Yeah, that's the tragic. That's the tragic, and he was so much used in propaganda in the Troubles, in the Civil War, and but as the poem of Yeats, his inner world, his feeling, and that something was speaking to me and still speaks to me, and when I came in touch with the people of the Bard, that. Yeah, they had this. They had this information where they were talking about that, and I think it will always be a source of inspiration, and especially when you look at the world today, where so many things come back we thought we would have step away from. Yeah, and this question of young people, getting into it, infatuated with anything and following a path, and maybe later on they find out, well, what has that got to do with me? Yeah.
Right. And just that quest for belonging and needing to find
Exactly.
some place that says, hey, you matter here, after having lived on the edges or just never quite feeling like you've been invited into a circle. So how did you name it? This, the sense of family matters, right? Right. That sense of which, either we know that those are full of joy or they're full of every conflict under the sun. What if you come from a family that doesn't have you feeling as if you're part of a cohesive whole? What are you out looking for then? And where might that bring you?
Well, you see, I was born into a very typical German lower middle class family where your whole life was planned. It was from the beginning, my parents said to me, well, you will do everything as we did. You will do school, you will run an education, you will take part in education, and then you will raise a family, and then you will do all this. And they said to me, your youth is the best time. Everything will come later, will be worse. And I said to myself, so why the whole thing? So that was from the beginning. Yeah, as I mentioned, my youth, I felt very dark, so I think. Yeah, this shaped me in a way. It's something you have a branding you can't get away completely, and you always have your parents inside you. There's not that's a biological fact, and but the music and the storytelling and the mythology offered me to find my own way. Yeah.
Yeah, and those ways that, our stories are the same but different, in the sense that I grew up in
Oh, yeah.
my middle class American world, where it was just sort of, what was culture? Like it was, people watched the same TV shows, we watched the same football games. Like there wasn't that sense of belonging to much bigger than maybe your town, but not in the sense of some deep-seated way. I grew up on Cape Cod, which is, a very many, it's a place where there are a few families who've been there for centuries, but most folks were washed ashore. So my parents themselves moved there in the 70s and ended up, never leaving. But that, whether we're coming from a need to respond to saying, oh, childhood was dark and it was so prescribed, or childhood felt kind of like a blank canvas and there wasn't enough to root into, it
Yeah.
was that sense of questing for, there's got to be something older than this and more than, okay, well, keep studying, go to college, plan your future, just keep pushing forward. Where's the backward? Because I'm feeling whispers of something deeper and
Exactly.
older than what's available to me.
Yeah. Something promising, something you can fall in love with. There must be something, and I have to admit, I had I'm very lucky that during the time and on certain points in my life, I met people to show me. I think this is what in many mythic stories happens when a kind of a mentor appears. And in my case, when I was about I think 34, yes, I got to a flat, and the landlady very soon said to me, "You are my third son." She had two sons, yeah, but in the next 14 years, I learned a lot from her because she was a musician and she was a teacher, and so this is maybe another dimension of this mythological pattern that in your life, when you're lucky, you meet someone who shows you a different world.
I mean, so if Cuchulainn needed to find his, his new warrior partner in Skaha, and then you finding that sort of bardic mother in a landlady of all places, it becomes those moments of, we know this, Joseph Campbell gave us the monomyth and gave us that part of finding the mentor as such a fundamental piece, which, we can fight with that now only because it's so fundamental that it's like, oh gosh, that is so true to our patterns. And what helps to make us. Because in so many ways, the story that you tell us here is a story of ne knowing he needed tutelage, like going through all of those travails, not in order to win, but just in order to learn. And that has a little bit of that, the oh, in the good old days, we walked back and forth to school uphill in the snow both ways. But there is that sense of saying, learning has a price and it's a beautiful, valuable one, and it will change everything if you can commit to the path and then see where it takes you.
And you see, this is so precious, because if you don't have this luck, I'm thinking of so many. You see, when I was born in 1966, but just turned 60 some weeks ago, and so I was brought up in the 80s, and it's maybe another interesting detail is at that time in Germany there were a lot of Americans. It was still the time of the East-West confrontation. And so I very soon came in touch with American music, American movies, and so on. And yeah, I was a typical child of the 80s. But during that time, we had a war between Iraq and Iran from 1980 to 1988. And it costed a million people's lives, and especially young people. And I was at that time, I was definitely not aware of it. Later, very many years later, I read about it, and it moved me in a strange. I mean, if you're born in the wrong place at the wrong time, yeah, that's it. So that's why I feel I'm a rich man, because I have found my tribe. And I'm able to do beautiful things, the storytellings, performances. This is always an honor to have a stage and to have an audience.
Well, and what you name in that too is this, if we want to speak about across lifetimes, whether we've experienced many of them, or we just know that within this one lifetime of being born within this set of decades that we have, depending on where you are, you could be born into a world where there's all the space in the world to become a bard, or you could be born into a world where there's no choice but to become a warrior.
Exactly.
And how do we hold that? Like, there's those moments when we're sitting in our comfortable living room surrounded by our books. And, what do we need to worry about after this? Making dinner. I hope I get enough sleep tonight. And trying to hold the clash within us of what's happening right now in Iran again. Where are we? We're just as we keep going through these cycles of these parts of the world that keep getting othered and keep becoming, oh, that's that place is a war zone. Wait, what? How did that definition come up? And then we come to these stories, and if we can slow down enough to say, what was the nature of Cuchulainn's warriorship? What's the nature of that Irish airman who says, I do not fight for people that I love. I do not fight against people that I hate. Oh, it just makes you speechless.
Yes. It's very, very complicated questions, and In an interview, I remember Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead, because this is one of my favorite bands. You just find out, and he said every morning he would get up at the window and ask himself, "What does that all mean?" You know, and it's
And whether it's the bird song or it's the anti-war protest or it's the sound of the bulldozer knocking over the trees, like what does it all mean? And so there's obviously this thread here. You know, you mentioned that phrase, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. We started this story with Phil Lynott. We've got Jerry Garcia in here. Like there is this fascinating quality of the rock star and the great warrior hero and how. As normal folk like you and I, how we hold these great iconic stories in relationship within ourselves and with one another. I just would love to kind of explore that with you, just in terms of that sense of icon and fame and these larger than life lives and how we interact with them and hold them.
It's always this balancing. You see, the I love the idea of this the fifth province. You know, the four Irish provinces and the fifth as a kind of balancing. And I think this, what you mentioned, is touching this subject of how do we balance with all this. And also, it comes to my mind that there's a in Germany, a very famous pianist who's really good, and just lately he said in an interview he asks himself, by all these demands of the society and political issues, if he's still got the right to spend 6 hours a day in making music. Yeah, and I think, wow, because he's so good, you know, he's really one of the A-class guys, and I think there shouldn't be any question. Yeah, and so yeah, we all, I think we could explore here this in many different directions. Yeah.
That right to make music and to make art, and then also the imperative to make music and make art, because I would assume everyone who knows this man's work says, please keep practicing. We don't need think you need to become any better, but if 6 hours a day is the way that it takes for you to be this, we need this for the souls, right? If music be, well, what is that Shakespeare quote? If music be the food of the soul of, oh, I can't remember it. The soul of
But
love. Yeah, that one. But we've known this across time, and then we keep seeming to have to struggle with it as individuals, even as we need our artists and our icons. And then we question, oh, well, should I spend my time on my art?
and that's and I mean, who should answer the question than ourselves? You have to, but again, it's you have to live in a democratic society. You have that this right to choose and say I'm going this way or that way, and this is yeah, it's one of the issues of these days. How will be the future of democracy? I think the whole Western world, I think as far as I get it, it's everywhere the same.
Really, right. It's just if you could swap out the characters, maybe we're at a slightly different place in the timeline, but what old stories do we seem to have to keep reliving until we get it through our heads that this way isn't quite seem to be working, lads? And I'm kind of using lads on purpose there. We have a, so here's the interesting piece, of course, you and I talked about this before we started today. As we're welcoming in Cuchulainn and his warrior ways, it happens to be in a season in which the focus for some of the episodes is on Tir na mBan, the island of women. And now, of course, we have Cuchulainn himself going to Skaha's island and being amongst women, having them be his teachers. You know, if Tir na mBan sort of has its sense of magic being in color and bird song and music, rather a different place than, Skaha's feminine world of warriorship and well-used poisons and, preparing to go back, kind of meet the warring armies. But there's such an interesting, parallel here between the genders, between what happens in the mainland and what happens on the island, and where, particularly the male warriors are, in Bran in the case of going to Tir na Mon, and Cuchulainn going in the case of going to Skaha's Island, what there is to learn from a place apart that is, essentially run and ruled by women.
That's you see, this is another interesting topic because you see, I in my youth I was often the opinion that this dominance of this it was also in the classes when you have this dominant guys who had their gangs and something like that, and I always was questioning that. That's, I thought this had nothing to do with me. I don't want to be like them, and there got to be a different way. And this, I think, many things have been achieved in the last 20 years. Regarding the role of men and women, and a lot of good things came around, but now it's on a stack. It's on a stack. It's the question: where do we will we go? And I think there is no way of going back. There is no way. Even if someone, and that's the thing. It's up to us, and it's this, I think everyone has to decide where's your input in the movement of the society. And that's but all I can tell you is that in my youth I felt, you see, my even another anecdote from my family. My father told me when I was about 14, 15, you have to be smarter than your wife, because if not, you're not in control. And if you believe it or not, I thought, that's bullshit. I don't buy that.
I absolutely believe that of you. I know your 14-year-old self was that wise, Peter. I believe that 100%.
There was something.
Something. But what does it take to outlive that? And it's a rare boy in the 80s who is saying, "You know what, Dad? You're full of shit." All respect to your father, but quite frankly, when you're given that sort of news, it's what we're raised with. What sort of youthful rebellion does it take in order to beat back whatever sort of indoctrination is given to us, that all there is in this life is work, or all there is in this life is to pursue your own personal pleasure, or all there is in order to perpetuate dominance of any kind? We're living up against this, and I'm sure, it's our internet age, it's all of these different things that now has it right in front of our faces, because of course it isn't just the voice of the father in the home, it's the voice of the podcasters who are not like us.
We're part of it.
A part of the counter revolution, right? That says, hey. And that's, part of this, I feel like it's so much part of this conversation. Everything we're doing here is this sense of like, it's not about separation. It isn't about saying, we're all, forget it. We're leaving this world and we're going to go take off with the women and we all have to, transform everything. It's that instead saying, hey, there's just a different way of being and preparing to be in the world. Right? Because isn't that's the way of these islands where, whether it's the other world or it's an island where you're going to learn, you don't stay forever. You come back with new tools.
Marissa, that's, I think that's a very, very interesting and very important point, that no one should be excluded. And the answer, or it can be just give a try to take out your hand and see what do we have in common. And this can't be this is the only way I think we can go. We have this, we're discussing a lot in the BART with the BART people about these things. And we used to have people who were very different, were much more conservative, and there were a lot of discussions going on, and it was not easy. But we've got to find a way to include and not to exclude, I think. And that's difficult. It demands, there's this demand, and I think this and it's how do we handle that we keep talking? Yeah, and you see, for myself, some days I don't feel able to be confronted with someone who's completely on the other side. Yeah.
And I would say the stories would give us that because Cuchulainn didn't go to battle every day. There's other days when he was just laying about in one of many women's beds, or he was just guarding a door. And just to, for which I for I would imagine for him is both work and rest because he was well traveled at it. But we're not meant to constantly be on the offensive and engaging because that's never been the way. In the way that nature never gives us constant growth, you are not meant to be out on the hunt every single day. And the earth is supposed to rest, gather our stories, and then we come and rise again on a day we can have the conversation and be part of a constructive dialogue rather than the collapse that we feel sometimes when confronted by a, you say, you see the world as what? You think I'm what because I'm this? Oh, some days we can handle that better than others.
Yeah, and this is another interesting point you have, because the whole Cuchulainn story, I mean, his life is a huge part of the whole of the Toyne. You know, this is the complete northern cycle of Irish mythology, and it's such a complex story with so many side stories. And all these different fates, and who is doing this, who is doing that, who is on which side. And this is another really, maybe, I think, away from the fact that Cuchulainn later killed his own son. He also killed his best friend in battle because he was on the other side. Yeah, it was Ferdia. And he met Ferdia at the Academy of Skaha, and they were best friends, and later he killed him with the Geirbolga, with the magical spear. But from that day on, he was broken. And that's so this is another, it's painful when you work all your way through the northern cycle, yeah. But it shows how people suffer, it shows how people had to make decisions later they regret, and sometimes we come to certain points in our life where decisions are really everything. And it's, you know, I don't want to dare looking back if I would have taken different decisions, you know.
Say that again. Say that part again.
You see, when I'm looking back in my life, I was lucky on certain days and made decisions, and it could have been a different way. I could have taken a different path. And so maybe I wouldn't sit here and talk with you.
Well, that's exactly where I was good. What my response was going to be. I'm just so grateful that this path has taken you to picking up the harp in your 20s and meeting the magical landlady in your 30s. And I'm not exactly sure when you got engaged with the bard, but I'm so grateful to have met you there on Clare Island last summer and to have just been able to hear the harp in person and just to sit in small circles with you and to feel this dopey, beautifully painful grin I seem to get on my face when I'm with you. Because I don't know, there's something in me that just recognizes a soul brother in you. And
Vice versa. But you see, this is the other thing of when you take the Bard Summer School, when the people, these people come together for 4 days, and you see, in the end, it's the fellowship. If you take Lord of the Rings, you have magicians, you have dragons, you have everything, but in the end, it's the fellowship. This will pull you through. We are on our own, and we have to take care of each other. And that's, I think, there's nothing much more I can see.
So it's probably the part where, as we say farewell, we let our listeners in on the secret that you and I go way back to our shared monastic community that we had within the Bard. For those of you, just to give you a preview of what the Bard is like, it often almost feels like a massive role-playing game, at least the one summer I've been there, where we get to go and embody these characters. And in our case, Peter and I were in a group of, I think, five of us who were part of a monastic community, and there were people who represented the Dedannans and the Firbolg and the Druids. And you and I, Peter, were pretty darn cool monks. And it's really wonderful to sit here now with you in modern times and share this conversation. I'm so grateful for your story, your insights.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed.
Oh, excellent. Well, you're welcome back anytime. The next time a story bubbles up in the belly, you know where to find me. This was so wonderful to meet Cuchulainn through your voice and your perspective. Really appreciate it.
Marisa, thank you very much. I feel honored.
Thank you for tuning in to Not Work, Myth, and Storytelling. Please subscribe and review the show on your favorite podcast platform, and do share this episode with other lovers of mythology and story. Want more knotwork in your life? Please consider becoming a paid subscriber to my newsletter, The Mythworker's Hearth, over on Substack. As a paid subscriber, you'll have access to the special new podcast series called Touras, which takes you even deeper into mythology, landscape, and the creative journey. And yes, that's a new name. You may know my newsletter as Myth is Medicine. It's now The Mythworker's Hearth. Creating this show is a labor of love, and your support will help me continue to craft and share stories throughout this season and beyond. You can find out more about my writing, my book, The Sovereignty Knot, A Woman's Way to Freedom, Power, Love, and Magic, our online writing communities, including the Author's Knot, as well as how to work with me as a writing coach over at my website, marisagowdy.com. Music on the show is by Beth Sweeney and Billy Hardy, a Celtic fiddle and multi-instrumental duo based on Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Find out about their music and shows at billyandbeth.com. My own work is inspired and sourced through a connection to my Irish ancestors. Gratefully, I live, write, work, and record this podcast on the ancestral lands of the Lenape, whose name means original people.